Previously on Documenta and Son.
Do you still want heels?
Yes, why would it make me not want heels?
I was wondering, you've been bugging me to get you heels for like a year. Ever since I started getting some.
Heels!
I know. Wait. What's this box here?
Yeah, very funny. Wait, there is a box.
What is this? Did you put this?
Bitch.
What is this box doing here? That's so weird that I just noticed it right now, but... I mean, I know we're recording a podcast and stuff. But why don't you just maybe open it and see if there's anything interesting in there. Hello, and welcome to Documenta and Son, being the adventures of a dad who's gay and a son who is figuring shit out. My name is Documenta Barbarism, the decline of Western civilization.
And I'm Dingle Mary, confusing grandmas since 2021.
Oh no, what have you done this time?
So I'm sitting there in the morning, I'm playing Metroid Dread on the Switch, great game, everyone should check it out. And Grandma sits down and says, "Can I talk to you about your heels?" And I was like, oh god.
Oh boy.
And I just started, and she said like, I was like, sure. And then a single sweat went down my cheek. And she just said like, "Why do you wear them? What do they give you?" And I'm like, "Oh, I just like wearing them because they're gorgeous and they make me feel powerful." And she was like, "But you're not a cross-dresser." And I was like, "Whoo, boy."
Okay.
And I said, "No, I'm not a cross-dresser." And I think there was like something else. But another part was, I'm just so proud that you're so confident in who you are and what you want to do. And I was like, "Thanks, Grandma."
Nice. Okay, a little progress.
Yeah.
So did you tell her that you're queer?
That would have been the perfect opportunity, wouldn't it have been?
The perfect opportunity is whenever you do it. I thought that's where the story was leading.
Nope. I really should have said that I'm bi, but oh well.
That's all right. I mean, that's every little bit helps.
Yeah.
I did hear you say something out there about gorgeous, but then when I came out, I saw that she had piled all those scarves next to you.
Oh, yes. She also afterwards did leave a bunch of scarves for me to go through.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah, I got a bunch of scarves, and they looked kind of fun.
Wait, she gave them to you?
Yeah, she said to just look through them and see which ones I want to keep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Work,
yeah. A couple of them look a little, but a lot of them look cute, so I'm probably going to keep a bunch of them.
Okay, this is a lot to process.
Grandma thinks I'm a cross-dresser, and I got some scarves!
You know, cross-dresser is generally, you know, frowned upon.
Yeah.
Except by the community, because there are still people who are cross-dressers and call themselves that, and that's still a perfectly valid form of expression, you know?
Yeah.
So that's fine. I definitely don't want to speak ill about my relatives on this pod, so I won't, because I have nothing ill to say, really.
Emphasis on the pod.
No, I would never speak ill will about any human being.
You speak ill of me constantly on this pod.
And off the mic, too.
And off the mic.
That's true. You're the exception, though. That's why we have children to be repositories of all of our ill will and stress.
I'm gonna have to rethink my decision about not having kids then.
Yeah. It's tough though, because they actually tend to actually cause most of it. So I don't know.
It's a lose-lose situation.
I mean other kids, not you.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Kid, this is interesting. I'm thinking this has got me thinking about a lot of things at once. especially mostly our recent conversation that we had. If you haven't yet, go check out my pieces in the recent edition of the Signal House edition, which you can find online. I was recently the guest editor for the issue that came out last week. And in it, I wrote an article about some of my experiences coming out, being gay, blah, blah, blah. And then had Dingleberry read the article. And then we also did an interview and talked about, because as I was writing, I wondered if some of the experiences that I had had as a closeted queer teenager growing up in a conservative household were repeating with this queer teenager who's not necessarily closeted, but kind of is to his grandparents. Yes. So we talked about that. Go read the interview.
I cry in it.
He cries a shit ton in it. It got to the point where I had to mark every time he was crying with an asterisk. There are at least 6 or 7 asterisks in there, I think.
And that doesn't include the times where I was crying that he didn't mark with an asterisk before.
No, I marked every time you started crying. Mm. So that was, it didn't make me happy to see you crying, obviously. But I liked that we at least had the chance to talk about those things that were clearly on your mind and had been bothering you.
Apparently.
That was kind of a revelation for both of us. So go check out that interview. But also, one of the things we talk about in there is your fear of coming out, or yeah, the fact that you'd been wearing the heels and you were a little weirded out or worried about how the grandparents were going to take it. Mm-hmm. So how is that? What's new on that front then?
I feel much more A-okay about wearing them in front of grandma now. So that's a plus. And then I don't know with grandpa. He's just going to be a weird enigma for a long time.
Well, in the interview, we got to the conclusion that you need to come out to them.
Yeah.
For your own sake, for your own peace of mind.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? What do you feel when you think about doing that?
Like, I don't want to do it.
How come?
Because it's gay-y.
Yeah, and we talk about all the reasons why. We don't need to rehash that. Go read the interview, the signalhouseedition.com, I think, .org. I don't know. Just Google the Signal House Edition. Or you can go to my socials. You can go to my Insta or Twitter. Instagram, Documented Barbarism. Twitter, Documented B. You got links for it there. Yeah, now that I've mentioned it, though, your whole affect has changed. You're, like, nervously picking at the bedspread. And you got... So there's still some nerves and tension there, huh?
Yes.
Talk to me about it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, anything I have to say will just be a rehash of what we said in the interview, which you can find at the Signal House Edition online, or access it on his socials. It's the Documented Barber. No, I don't know.
Documented Barbarism.
Documented Barbarism. Thank you.
Marketing. So it's just more of the same still.
Yeah.
You haven't necessarily resolved those feelings.
No.
Are you still determined to come out to both of them?
Eventually, probably. Maybe like the day before we move out.
Okay.
Procrastination.
That's fine. Do it when you need to. Go back and read the interview again. It seems to me like maybe you've forgotten about some of the conclusions you yourself came to and the resolutions that you made.
I wouldn't say forgotten, more so purposefully removed.
Got it.
Yeah.
So it was great. You had this emotional and intellectual breakthrough. The clouds parted. You gained some clarity about the best way to move forward, and then instantly turned your back on it.
Yes, exactly.
Well, hey, you got to move at your own pace and do what you got to do. So do that.
I will.
All right. Well, I am really enjoying this gay trivia quiz book. And I kind of want to do the whole thing.
That's really fun.
I agree. And it's, let's see, 309 questions.
Holy shit.
So if we do 10 at a time, then it should take us about a year to get through the whole thing.
Hey, content.
Yeah, exactly. Automatic content. But really, I think it's interesting. I've been flipping through it just very little. I don't want to really know what it says, but it is definitely very much of its time.
Really?
1985. So that'll be interesting when we get to other, as we've already seen, actually, but when we get to even more questions about gay culture in 1985, it becomes really revealing and highly problematic.
Oh, boy.
So I can't wait for that. But in the meantime, let's just continue, shall we?
Sure.
As a reminder, If this is your first time listening, we are going through the Gay Trivia Quiz Book by James Aaron from 1985. We are in the first section, which is called Personalities. We've been taking turns, and I guess we might as well continue with that, which would mean it is your turn to ask me.
Woo!
Unfortunately.
I'm not going to get any wrong this time. So we did...
You're on 21.
21.
Yeah.
True or false, Sal Mineo produced a revival of Fortune and Men's Eyes, starred in a West Coast production of James Kirkwood's P.S. Your Cat is Dead, and supposedly turned queer, in quotation marks, after the auto wreck that took James Dean's life, his co-star in Rebel Without a Cause.
Sal Mineo.
What did I say?
Sal Mineo. But that's okay. I'm going to say true.
I don't want to label people as food diseases. True. He said that after leaving a seance at which he had been trying to contact James Dean, he was in a car crash, but miraculously his life was spared, and the name James Dean appeared on the wrecked car's windshield. From that moment on, Mineo claimed he was gay.
Mineo. Well, that's interesting. I knew he was gay, and there's a lot of that actual subtext in the film. He's in Rebel Without a Cause, I believe.
That's what it says here.
Right, yes. there's a lot of that gay subtext there, but I didn't know about all that weird stuff. That's cool.
That's fun. This man, whose collection of Greek art forms... Sorry. His collection of Greek art forms the core of the collection at the Boston Museum of Fine Arts and New York's Metropolitan Museum of Art. God, I'm having a bad morning. Wrote the 3-volume Defense of Uranian Love, an apologia for pederasty. Oh my God, why am I getting the hard questions?
It's funny that you're more worried about your pronunciation of these words than the fact that this man has written an apologia for pederasty.
What? I'm not entirely sure what that means.
Pedophilia.
Oh.
Like, oh boy, this is really disconcerting. I can't say these words.
An apologia for pederasty, as embodied in the Greek art that he loved. He also wrote A Tale of Pausanian Love about homosexuality at Oxford. Who was he? Gunnar Myrdal, Gerard Manley Hopkins, Terence Rattigan, or Edward Perry Warren?
Let's say Gerard Manley Hopkins.
Edward Perry Warren.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Well, I know it's not Terence Rattigan. He's a playwright.
Oh. Traces of amyl nitrate or poppers.
Amyl. Actually, maybe do some people say amyl. So I don't know.
Because I feel like amyl is just too close, or amyl is just too close to anal.
Yeah, but I think.
Which is good, but.
There's a character in Derek Jarman's film Jubilee named amyl nitrate. So that's what I think of pronunciation-wise.
That's funny. Anyways, traces of that substance were reportedly discovered in this actor's body. Some even speculate that he died of a pauper-induced heart attack. Who is he? Sal Mineo? Mineo.
Very good.
I think it's Mineo, but then I'm like, no, I'm wrong. And so I say Mineo. Ugh. Burt Ward, who played Robin in the Batman TV series. Which one? Paul Lynde of Hollywood Squares fame, or Melvin Douglas, who made one of his last appearances in Being There.
Wow. I'm just going to say Burt Ward because I hope it's him, because I always had a crush on him when I was a kid.
So you want him to have died of a pauper-induced heart attack?
No, I want him to have been in The Family.
Oh. Sorry. Paul Lynde. An autopsy revealed traces of amyl nitrate in the body of Paul Lynde, who will forever be remembered for his campy humor on the television game show Hollywood Squares, which leads one to certain conclusions about what he may have been doing just before his death. Yeah, obviously.
Doy. Doy. Yeah, it's the best kind of death to have.
Drug-induced?
No, fucking.
Oh. I'm not entirely sure what amyl nitrate is.
It's poppers. Is, I think we remember when we were doing... Frank Moore, there was bottles of poppers. It was one of the flotsam in one of the paintings.
Hmm.
And the way I described it then was that it loosens your asshole, I think.
Oh my God.
Do you remember that? Do you not remember that?
Now I do.
drugs.
Oh, I thought it was like drugs or something.
Well, it is. It kind of is. And it's really interesting. Maybe we can do a whole Poppers themed episode sometime. I've never done them. And now that I'm on hypertension medication, I'm not supposed to do them. They can be very dangerous because it slows your heart rate and stuff. Mm. It is drug-ish. So that's why they get sold usually as under different names. Like at one point, they were sold as VCR head cleaners, like to clean VCR tapes and stuff. But there's those little bottles that you sniff. So you take a lid off and sniff. I have been offered poppers before, but I've never done them.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So I think the implication is he was fucking.
Cool.
Or being fucked, I guess, supposedly. But Paul Lynde, does remember who De La did on Snatch Game?
Oh, I remember her doing well on Snatch Game, but I don't remember her performance.
Yeah. Well, on one of them, I can't remember who she did on the other one, but yeah, he's the dad in Bye Bye Birdie. He like talks like this all the time.
Yes, holy shit. Kids,
what's the matter with kids today?
Holy shit. Wait, is he gay?
Oh, yeah, super gay.
Oh, yeah, let's go.
He died from a papa-induced heart attack. What further evidence do you need? Yes, I think he might have been a homosexual.
All right, shush.
Yeah, so he was, and like Charles Nelson Reilly, who is the one who, remember on season 13, RuPaul was like, oh, Charles Nelson Reilly. And everyone was like, oh, and he's like, heads up, who have you heard of Charles Nelson Reilly?
Oh my God.
Raise their hands, remember? Yes. And he was like, fuck you all.
Yes, that was the best moment of season 13, hands down.
Yeah, so that was a couple, it was like an open secret that they were gay.
Interesting. Cool. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This former Inspector General of the United States originally trained men under Frederick the Great for his Prussian army, but lost favor when it was discovered that he took indecent liberties with some of his students.
Ooh.
Ooh. What is his name? Baron Alfred von Meijberg, Baron Friedrich von Steuben, Count Wilhelm von Liechtenstein, or Sir William Hamilton Carter?
I'll say C, even though you're not giving me the letters. I'll say C.
Sorry. B, Baron Friedrich von Steuben. He was made Inspector General of the United States by the Continental
Congress. That's all right. I'll never remember
this. Okay.
Next.
I'm already doing U.S. History 1 in school. I don't need to do it here as well. The 19th century poet and philosopher Ralph Waldo Emerson. Where is he? Refers in his journals.
What?
Where is he? Ralph Waldo Emerson? Where's Waldo?
Oh, that was a good one.
Hey, you're laughing.
Yes, I am.
I'll take it.
Okay, continue. Ralph Waldo Emerson, got it.
Refers in his journals to his crush on a classmate at Harvard, an infatuation considered now to be a classic example of adolescent homosexuality. Same. Though later in life, Emerson tried desperately to remove all references to his love, in quotations, enough remains to give us a clear picture of who he was. What was his name? Martin Gay with an E.
A.
Martin Gay with an E. Gerard Walker.
B.
C. Dudley Milton. Or D. Dudley Dorrit. Or
don't know any of them, so I'll say... I don't think it's Dudley Do-Right. That was a cartoon character.
Oh.
But maybe there was a real person named that, too. Let's say Martin Gay, because it sounds a lot like Marvin Gay.
Good job.
Yes.
There's nothing else, though. It's just the answer. This poet died when he was only 27, but after his death, he was canonized by the British, as much for his poetry as for the loss of one of Britain's truly beautiful young men, who was also a soldier and a man of valor. His poetry was clearly homoerotic, and in the 1920s, actress Tallulah Bankhead claimed to have read love letters he wrote to another young man. Who is this poet? A. Walter Pater. It's Peter, but with an A. B. Rupert Brooke. C. Goldsworthy Dickinson. D. Charles Warren Stoddard. I think.
What was C again?
Goldsworthy Dickinson.
I want to say C, just so I can hear the name Goldsworthy Dickinson as much as possible.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It was B, Rupert Brooke. His beauty is said to have prompted Lytton Strachey and John Maynard Keynes to fight over the privilege of wooing him while they were at Cambridge.
Keynes.
What did I say?
Keynes.
Oof. What two British kings with the name of Richard were gay?
Richard and Richard.
Hold on.
Did I get it?
Give me a second.
What do I win?
Give me a second. A, Richard II and Richard the Lionhearted. B, Richard I and Richard II. Or C, Richard IV and Richard I. Or D, none of the above. There were no British kings named Richard who are known to have been gay.
I'm going to say Richard II because there is some really gay, well, not explicit, obviously, but there are some gay undertones
in the
play. And also he was played by Ben Whishaw in the film they did. So
Is he gay?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, cool.
And then also like David Tennant played him really fruity in the RS, in the RSC version. And I think they may have just like put actual like gay kisses in it, which is my long way of saying it's at least Richard II. Which ones was he in?
A or B. He was either with Richard the Lionhearted or Richard the First.
Let's say Richard the Lionhearted, A.
Good job. Both of these Richards were known to be gay.
Yes. That's interesting because Richard the Lionhearted is always thought to be so manly and masculine, which obviously being gay does not.
It actually adds to the idea.
Yeah, but like in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, for example, he's played at the very end by Sean Connery.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And Laura, think of like...
What a good movie.
You know, in the Robin Hood cartoon for Disney...
He's a literal lion.
Well, King John is, yeah, and King John is like this little, like, simper. He's like the, like, faggy character, you know?
Oh my gosh, you're right.
And then Richard comes in.
Holy shit, he is so faggy.
Yeah, he's super faggy.
Wait, but, am I allowed to say that yet?
We'll do a Twitter poll. Can Dingle say fag? if you want to say it, then you go right ahead.
If the audience decides no, then I will publicly announce that I am going to stop saying the F slur because my dad told me it's a bad word.
Full of Matt Damon. Yes. Unforced error. Nice.
Unforced
error. I used to say fag all the time. But my dad taught me it's a bad thing.
So I'm going to stop.
Hey, everyone. Stop what you're doing. Listen up, everyone.
Actor announcement.
Yes. Actor announcement. I no longer say fag. Oh, God.
Matt Damon.
Oh, he really is the gift that keeps on giving, isn't he?
Yeah.
Okay, continue.
Oh, man. Okay.
Come on, fag, hurry up.
Stop! What Swedish queen was known to be lesbian? A. Una. It's just O-O-N-A. B.
Yeah, that's a common name.
I just didn't expect it. B. Anna. C. Abba. Or D. Christina.
We'll say Anna.
Sorry.
Christina.
Good. Good
job. I said Christina. That's the only one I said.
I started. Yes, it is Christina, who lived from 1626 to 1689.
Oh, work, 17th century bitch.
Wait. No, that's 15th century.
In the 1600s?
Yeah.
That's the 17th century.
Right.
0 to 100 is 1. 100 to 200 is 2, and so on. Just as right now, 2021, we're in the 21st century.
I hate
English. It's all right. You've got a lot of other really good qualities.
The author of Linden, an oral biography, has also written several books dealing with homosexuality. Who is he? Seymour Hersh. Ugh. B. Alan Drury. C. Merle Miller. That's a tongue twister. D. David S. Broder.
I don't care. It doesn't matter. Just tell me the answer and we'll move on to the next one.
Okay, it's C. Merle Miller.
No offense, Merle. No one talks about you.
Oh, dang.
What number are we on?
This is the last one. 30. This well-known poet married, even though he was so infatuated with a 17-year-old boy named Arthur Rimbaud that he
Rimbaud.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you know the answer?
I don't, but I know that that is important as a gay that you need to know how to pronounce Rimbaud.
Rimbaud. Mm-hmm. Named Arthur Rimbaud, that he brought him into his home to live with both him and his wife, where they openly continued their homosexual affair.
I think it was Baudelaire.
Who was he? That's not an option.
Then I'm very wrong.
A. Paul Verlaine.
Oh, yeah, it's Verlaine.
B. Algernon Swinburne. All right, just to...
Algernon Swinburne, I guess?
Yeah. No, you're right. It's A. I don't want to read any of the other options because I'm going to stumble over them. Okay, actually, these ones are easy. Walt Whitman or W.H. Auden?
Auden.
It is A. Paul.
Paul Verlaine.
Good job.
Does it say anything about Paul Verlaine?
No, that's all it says.
All right, work!
You got more right than I did, work!
Yeah, duh, I'm smarter.
Even though I did win at Trivial Pursuit yesterday.
Rub it in. No, that was very impressive. I'm very proud of you.
And they didn't even give me it was a controversy-free win because they didn't give me a widget when I didn't deserve it.
Yeah. Yep, that's true. I mean, I really have nothing to say about that. You're just so smart.
No, I'm just so a trivia wonderful. God.
You're not bad for a fag. Let's take a break.
Okay, thanks. God damn it. Stop! Sorry! God damn it. What? This is all staying in, right?
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome back, everybody.
Nothing interesting or exciting happened in the break. You're not missing anything.
Nothing exciting or interesting ever happens in the break.
Yeah. We just stand up, and that's the most exciting the break gets. We keep all the excitement here for you in the pod.
So, this week...
Because that was exciting.
It's almost Thanksgiving time, that very non-problematic holiday where we celebrate only positive things in this country and definitely don't try to sweep under the rug all the horrible things that we did to get this country up on its feet.
Yep.
And the way we do that is by gathering together, often eating a lot of food.
Yummy food.
Very yummy food. So we thought, with the holidays really in full swing now... Halloween is technically the holidays, but it's kind of its own thing. It's really November 1st that it's like, holidays!
Yep. I always try and stay away from like Christmas music and films and all that until after Thanksgiving. But the morning I wake up from Thanksgiving, I put on my Santa hat and walk around and be like, ho, 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 to everyone I see.
What he's not mentioning is that that's the only thing he's wearing at the time.
Yeah, I go butt naked to school. Oh, no.
And it's a little Santa hat, and it covers his dick. We've had complaints, let me tell you. God, it is not it. A very Merry Christmas around these parts.
God damn it.
So the beginning of the whole role of the holiday season... Plus, combined with the fact that my personal view of this podcast has been changing a little bit. At the beginning, I was choosing more specifically gay cultural objects because at that point, partly that was you were identifying as gay when we started this.
Yes.
You have since changed. Well, I mean, changed. Yes, it's a change. Yeah, it's a refinement. Yes. You have since refined.
That's a good way of looking at it.
How do you identify currently?
Currently, I identify as a bisexual demiromantic, which means that I am sexually attracted to both genders, but before I can form a sexual connection to someone, I must first, or a romantic connection to someone, I must first have already established an emotional connection via, like, friendship.
Right.
Basically, what I'm saying is I don't believe in love at first sight.
Got it. Oh, okay, interesting. And I'm really excited to see how it continues to develop once you've actually started fucking.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's great that you are it's a process, and whatever you are that day, I'm here, I support you. I affirm, that's the word, I affirm that. So I'm glad that you are open and willing and on that journey. But what it's also made me do is realize that we don't need to be so limited. I call this a queer podcast. I call House of Barbarism 3 queer podcasts in one, right? So we're trying to branch out a little more, move out beyond specifically quote-unquote gay content. So with the beginning of the holidays and this subtle shift in perspective, I thought it would be fun to talk about 2 holiday going home movies directed by lesbians. Which means we are going to be talking about Home for the Holidays from 1995, directed by one Jodie Foster.
It's such a good movie. Oh my god.
And Happiest Season from 2020, directed by one Clea DuVall.
Which is also such a good movie. Oh my god.
So let's just dive right in, shall we? Let's start with Home for the Holidays. We'll go chronological. Do you want to give us a little synopsis?
Sure, of course. So the whole movie starts off with, what's the character's name?
Claudia.
Claudia, thank you.
Played by Holly Hunter.
Thank you. Claudia, played by Holly Hunter, has to go home for Thanksgiving to her parents' home after getting fired, and a bunch of bad stuff happens, and it goes crazy because of her family.
Yes, that's true. That is what happens. It's a very typical family reunion at the holidays film. There have been thousands of them, and it's always a kooky cast of characters, and things go wrong. She is an art restorer. Did you say that?
No, but yes.
You said it in the one that
I said it in the one that we cut.
That yes. I said we can't use. What are you talking about? We don't cut anything. All of our content is pristine and comes out of our mouths perfect. I don't have to do any editing.
Yes.
She's an art restorer in Chicago. She flies home. Before that, her daughter, Claire Danes, tells her she's going to have sex. She's 16 with her boyfriend over the weekend. Goes home. She's got a kooky cast of characters. Her parents, played by Anne Bancroft and Charles Durning. Did I tell you that Anne Bancroft is Mrs. Robinson from The Graduate?
Oh, really? No, you did not, but that's interesting.
Uh-huh. That's fun. And then her brother is played by
Robert Downey Jr.
Yes.
And he's gay as fuck.
Yes, he is definitely Robert Downey Jr. playing a version of gay.
On adrenaline,
yes. So that's really what gives it it's the explicit level of queerness that we can see is Robert Downey Jr. comes home and he is gay. And he comes home with a person that we think might be a boyfriend. Turns out isn't because he's not gay, played by Dylan McDermott. And wackiness ensues. So you liked this film?
I thought it was really funny. I did resonate with it, mostly just because, at least in the other grandparents' house, Thanksgiving was always wacky and wild and crazy. And grandma was always stressing. But I just thought it was really fun and funny. Yeah, I mean, I liked it.
Yeah, it's great. And it is a movie that's taken me a little bit of time to warm up to. I first discovered it because Michael Koreski, one of my favorite film critics, period, but he's a gay film critic in the city. He has stumped for it. I heard him talk about it on a podcast. He wrote about it on his call at his biweekly, I think. Is biweekly every 2 weeks?
Yes.
Or twice? It's not twice a week, right?
Biweekly is every other week.
Right, okay. Column called Queer Now and Then that he used to write for Film Comment before the pandemic ruined everything. Film Comment just went bye-bye.
Oh, no, wait, really?
The print version did. They sort of are limping along now in some sort of online format. They've brought the podcast back, but no, the magazine was sunk. It's a very sad story that we don't need to talk about because I'm in a good mood right now.
F's in the chat.
What does that mean?
It's an internet slang. When people say F's in the chat, that means to pay respects because it's a reference of a funny image from a video game. It's a really sad moment, like an important character dies, and you step up to his grave, and then just says, press F to pay respects.
Oh, F's in the chat.
So F's in the chat means that.
F's in the chat to Film Comment. So I finally watched it for the first time a few years ago, and I didn't quite know what to make of it. because it is wacky.
It is super wacky. Wacky is a great description of the movie.
Yes, and certainly that's the first thing you feel, that these people are not reacting in
normal human manners.
Well, that's the thing, is it's not, they are reacting in normal ways, they're just not reacting in normal Hollywood-style behavior.
That's a good way of putting it.
Which is a very proscribed way of looking at things, where you can usually predict the way a person is going to react, mm-hmm. you know, based on character types, based on things like that. There isn't really anything in Home for the Holidays to really center us in that. It starts with, it's actually a really beautiful credit sequence where she's working on a painting and it's showing the very up close of the like the gold leaf work that she's doing. Isn't the very first image an egg?
Yes, we see like an egg held up by some kind of like tonsil grabby thing.
No, it's just fingers.
Oh yeah, wait, really?
Yeah.
Oh wow. She just like is holding an egg yolk by the fingers, and then we just see a pin go into the frame and then go poke, and the yolk comes out.
So satisfying.
It is so satisfying.
It's really, the whole sequence is really beautiful, and it's partly because of this fine work that we're seeing. It's super close up.
Yeah, it's really cool. And then we get closer to the end and we kind of finally like see her full face for a moment. And then she's kind of moving weird. And then she just sneezes really loudly and we cut to the actual story.
Yeah, that the credits are done and the story is begun.
The music stops. It's so funny. It's such a great way to go jump right into the story and her character.
Totally. Which is, that sneeze is never really explained because she doesn't really, she says she has a cold, right?
She says she has a cold, like when talking to her grandparents or to her parents.
But I don't know if she really does or if she's just, it seems to be more like it seems almost more like an external manifestation of her stress, the stress in her life, the things that she's dealing with.
Yeah, interesting, because at one point she does say that she has like a 24-hour bug that has been going around, but it lasts for the 2 or 3 days of the film, so.
But it also comes and goes randomly, is the thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's no other indication that she's sick, except that she says, I'm sick, and she sneezes. So I don't know if that's intentional, because it only happens randomly. But that's also, yes, one of the early disjunctures that throws you off balance. You've got this beautiful, really hypnotic sequence, almost, under the credits. Yeah. And then she sneezes. And it's so funny.
Because she sneezes, like, super loudly, too.
That's the other thing, is they seem so obviously exaggerated and fake. I know people do sneeze like that. I have a certain person who I related to that sneezes like that.
All dads.
So I don't know. I mean, I don't want to dwell too much on the sneezing, but the point being that it's disorienting and you don't know, you never know exactly what kind of movie it is that you're watching, even though genre, you know.
It's comedy.
Comedy, but then also even more specifically, returning home, you know, the awkward family reunion. It's a genre old as time.
Yeah.
You know, literally going back to the Odyssey.
That's true. Oh my God.
And there is a trope in screenwriting that you were supposed to avoid. Crazy for crazy's sake, or something like that. I don't know. I've heard it in my classes and stuff. But this movie
looks at Beetlejuice and suspicion.
Well, then Beetlejuice is an interesting example because you have the Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis. The central characters are like the straight characters.
Oh my gosh. I love relating everything to straight and gay dichotomies.
No. I'm sorry. I didn't mean straight in that sense. Oh. I don't mean straight in the sexual sense. I meant like the straight man. You know, in a comedy duo, you've got the crazy one and then the straight man.
Yeah.
Know? So even in Beetlejuice, there is quote unquote normal.
That is
to
true.
Ground the craziness.
That is true.
Whereas in this, there really isn't. There is no central character or situation or dynamic that you can point to as the normal or the center of gravity.
That's true.
And then Robert Downey Jr. shows up. And as often happens when Robert Downey Jr. shows up in a movie, takes you a few minutes to really think, really? Is this really the route we're going down there, Robbie? And it's fine. At least in this case, you realize, you know, you got to remember this is when he was like at the height of his drug fueled mania, like 90s coke binge, all of that shit.
Really? He was
like, oh yeah. Oh yeah. No, he was, I mean, he really went off the deep end.
Oh damn.
For a while. And that's, they certainly spun that narrative of redemption with Iron Man with, as like his big return. And that was like a whole, you know, they made, gave him his own heroic arc off screen to complement what was going on screen.
That's interesting.
And Robert Downey Jr. is really, I think we should probably talk the most about him in relation to this, just partly because he's the queer character. Because
he's the queer of the movie.
But then also because part of what I think is so wonderful about Home for the Holidays is it's not just weird. Like, yes, it's kooky. Yes, it's weird. But there is a real human warmth to it, too. Maybe warmth isn't the word. Maybe humanity is the word. Because these do feel like three-dimensional characters. They are not just their quirks. They are not just their tics, you know. They are, they have them, and that gives the movie real personality. But beyond that, it just feels human in a way that film, certainly mainstream Hollywood film, so rarely does anymore. And that's partly because of Robert Downey Jr. Because Iron Man was such a success, largely because of his personality, clearly Marvel just said, okay, this is the blueprint.
Yeah.
So now every Marvel movie must have this style of ironic, mumbly humor. Maybe mumbly is not the right word, but it is a sort of a, like a semi-neurotic humor, but really sanded off of any rough edges or anything, you know? And so it's interesting to see this person who, in an maybe not as direct way as I'm saying, way is responsible for this type of humor that has come to stand in for all personality and humor in mainstream Hollywood filmmaking.
Yeah.
Using those tics for not evil.
That's really funny. Yeah. His character is like super energetic the whole time. And he does, he often will just like, one of the key points where we learn like his relationship with the various characters and how he is as a character is when Claudia needs to get in the car that Robert Downey Jr. is in, and she reaches for the door and he starts to drive away, which is, I like got PTSD because Dad does that all the time.
I used to, when was the last time I actually did it?
I remember specifically it was in the parking lot at Costa Rica.
You've never been to Costa Rica.
Or not Costa Rica.
You've been to Chile, but not Costa Rica.
It's the casino place. It's all like
La Cocina?
La Cocina.
Oh, right. When was the last time we were at La Cocina? How many years has that been? Anyway, I will concede the point that yes, that is a thing I have done often. But think about why he does it. Why does he act out that way? Do you think he acts, let me put it this way. So he also is returning home.
Yeah.
It's not sure if, they're not sure if he's going to be there. She calls and leaves a weepy message to him on the airplane. I got the feeling anyway that this is not how he behaves when he's with what he calls his real family.
Yeah.
When you, and this is part of what I wrestle with every fucking day in this home where I am both a parent and a child, is that when you go back to your parents' home, even if it's a home you didn't grow up in, like this home we're living in now, you still, no matter how old you are, you become the child again and you start acting like that.
Yeah.
So that's what I think is so beautiful about it is that, yes, he's fucking obnoxious.
He's a right git.
Yeah. He's unbearable. But you realize, you come to realize that it's because of growing up partly surrounded by this cast of eccentric characters, but also it's his defense against the world, growing up gay in a conservative area. Which is sort of my long way of restating what I said before about using, channeling that Robert Downey-ness for good, putting it in the service of something good and not just as whatever it's become, you know, in his second career.
Yeah. I've actually never actually seen anything with Robert Downey, the original.
Robert Downey Sr.?
Senior, yeah.
He was a director.
Oh, he was? Because I was about to say, like, is he the same energy as the junior?
Maybe he did some acting, too. I don't know. But Robert Downey Jr. actually appeared in some of his films as a kid. But no, that's a whole interesting story, too, that we don't have time to get into. But his dad was, like, an avant-garde kind of underground film director.
Really?
Yeah, like, really progressive, really radical type films.
And then his son became the figurehead of Marvel.
Yeah, it just shows that Nothing means anything.
And nothing is safe. Hide yeah. your children.
Yeah. So what I love so much about Home for the Holidays, in addition to what we've talked about, is, and this is what Michael Koreski talks about too, is that this queer sensibility is imbued throughout the whole thing. And you can't help but wonder if it's because Jodie Foster was still in the closet at that time.
Oh, really?
It was also kind of an open secret, but she wasn't officially out. So there's this, it's almost, you can feel, and maybe this is projection, but it's like you can feel her putting everything she wants to say about queerness, about the closet, about all of these things. Really every frame, you know, imbuing every frame with it. That's why there's so much off kilter and crazy and kind of insane about it.
Yeah, but still like really just like beautiful and amazing and like the way it's shot, you know?
Yeah, it did. It looked really beautiful.
It
like
so good.
That house is
looking gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. And it's not like a mansion or anything. It's like a working class, maybe middle class neighborhood.
I would pay for that house right now, cash up front.
Yeah, shot really beautifully by Laios Koltai. There's shadows and you never really, even in the home, you're never really sure where things are in relationship to one another.
It's a maze.
Like there, you walk in and there's that weird, it's kind of like the Stranger Things house where there's a staircase going up with little staircases on the side leading up to it. But you always, everywhere, every time I thought I knew where I was in the house in relation to the other rooms, I didn't. Which I loved. Is this perfect, object manifestation of
The kooky craziness of the family.
Yeah. And then
And how none of the particular pieces of the family fit together very well, you know? Like, they always rub up against each other, especially the sister.
Joanne, yeah. Cynthia Stevenson, whose husband is played by Steve Guttenberg, who I met.
Oh, good. That's fun. Yeah, like, she definitely feels the least connected of the family members, and she and Robert Downey Jr. rub up against each other often and don't really.
And then after the craziness at the table, in which the aunt played by Geraldine Chaplin has this whole insane monologue out of nowhere about how she's been obsessed with Charles Durning all these years. And most of the people are just like, okay. And everything goes wrong at the dinner table. Then you discover that there's a whole fucking room behind a wall.
Which is, there were, like, Claudia goes to look for her mom, and she was like, oh, she's probably there. And then she just walks through a wall, pushes it, and it opens. I was like, what?
Yeah, for some random reason, the pantry is in a hidden room.
But, like, oh my god, but that's, like, but then it's so good, because we find the mom there, and she's like, it's like she purposefully hid herself away from that, which is, oh my god, it's such a good movie.
Yeah, it kind of is almost like Edgar Allan Poe. What's the one where the guy gets buried in the wall?
Cask of Amontillado, Amontillado. Yeah. I only know about that because we read it for English.
You don't need to say, you don't need to qualify that kind of stuff. You can just be smart and know things. Yeah, that, where it's like she literally goes and buries herself in the wall for a minute to get away from things. And of course, she has to be coaxed out.
With food.
And then it's also just fucking hilarious.
It's so funny. Claudia's performance. Holly Hunter's. Thank you. Her performance is so good.
I mean, she's otherworldly. She always is. She's next level.
She's so funny in that movie. Robert Downey Jr. plays adrenaline hopped up gay really well.
Certainly as well as you could expect in the 90s.
From Robert Downey Jr.
But then really so moving too.
Yeah.
At the end, it cuts to like 8mm style, maybe 16mm style home video footage.
Yeah. And there's like a little home video clip of each of the family members, including Aunt Gladys kissing the dad.
Yeah, so some of it is, like, from the past, supposedly, scenes that probably were never actually filmed. Okay, well, here's why it's so moving, is because it refers to a moment that the father talks about.
Yeah.
When he's talking about to Claudia, right?
Mm-hmm.
About a moment when they were watching, when they were out at the airport where he worked his whole career watching the airplanes take off. And was she like, what is, she runs out towards it or something?
So Jane. The annoying sister.
Jane? That's the annoying sister in Happiest Season.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Oh, Joanne.
Joanne, thank you. Joanne and Robert Downey Jr.
His character is named Tommy.
Tommy, thank you. Joanne and Tommy are like holding on to the mother, but Claudia is just watching wide-eyed, just like super into it, not scared of it at all.
Right, and that was a beautiful moment for him because it seemed to portend great things for her future, right?
Yeah.
And he says, it's a moment that I wish I could hold on to forever.
Yeah.
So then when it cuts from her being on an airplane to that footage of them, so it's impossible footage because it's of the whole family, beautifully framed, but it's home video style. So it's a video, it's a home video that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Right? But it still just evokes that instant nostalgia and that the warmth of that. It's a really bitter and angry film throughout, yes, too, as well. So it's really almost a shock at the end when you see this footage that is so warm and beautiful. And it took me right back. That's something my family used to do when I was young. We were too poor to do anything that cost money. So we would drive out to the airport and park out on the fields and watch planes come and go.
They really let you do that?
Yeah, back in the day, you could get a lot closer.
Yeah, pre-9/11.
Yeah. And we would go up to the University of Utah Hospital up there on the mountain and just sit, park right above it, and watch the medevac, the helicopters come in, you know, fly across the valley, land, and then take off. So it has this really strong emotional resonance for me, too. Edgar Allan Poe is actually an interesting connection to Happiest Season. This idea of the going home to be with your family at the holidays as a horror film.
Yes.
Because when we were rewatching Happiest Season, which we had both watched already, this was actually my sixth viewing. I'm only slightly embarrassed to admit.
And his second this year.
And my second this year. I don't know what it is. No, I do know what it is.
It's hilarious. And Kristen Stewart.
It's Kristen Stewart. No, it's funny, but it's Kristen Stewart. She is my goddess. She is my diva. She is my eternal supreme leader. She is the only deity I recognize. I will lay down my life gladly for K-Stew and request nothing in return except the pleasure of dying for her.
Damn, that's a lot. You almost turned me from being an atheist.
Happiest Season was supposed to premiere in theaters, but then COVID done fucked everything up. And it ended up instead being dumped onto Hulu. So I saw it four times last year. There was something about it, and it's not just the K-Stew, even though it's primarily the K-Stew, but it's very, I don't think I could watch Home for the Holidays four times a year.
No.
Partly because it's so involving. It's moving, but it also requires something of you because it's so destabilizing, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas Happiest Season just glides by on the surface, requires nothing of you, demands nothing of you, just offers pure pop entertainment. Is that unfair to say? Is that incorrect?
There's some thinking.
Is there?
Yeah, if you want to look at it deeper, I guess.
Well, of course, no, everything can be.
Yeah, that's true.
Everything can be thought through critically. I'm not saying that. I'm saying this film does not ask or require that of the viewer in the way – it doesn't require an engaged viewership in the way more demanding films like Home for the Holidays or really demanding films might.
Yeah, you're right.
It really doesn't. It asks nothing of you. And as I said before, it's directed by Clea DuVall, who is – no Jodie Foster when it comes to directing. But I do love her. We stan Clea as well. She was in, you haven't seen But I'm a Cheerleader, have you?
No.
You would remember if you did.
Oh, okay.
It's starring Natasha Lyonne from Russian Doll. She goes to this gay conversion therapy camp.
Yeah, no, I've not seen this.
Where one of the, there are boys and girls there, and one of the ex-gay counselors is played by RuPaul. It's so funny to see him like
be straight and
teach them how to like butch up, like, grabbing their crotches and stuff. It's great. We should watch it. I think you'd really love it. I mean, that's the joke. It's really campy, and it's played for laughs, but about a serious subject, gay conversion therapy. But Clea DuVall is a lesbian icon as well, and so she directed this film, And it is technically a lesbian film. I have seen commenters online that have said there's nothing lesbian about it. There is, which is not to say there's obviously a lesbian relationship at the core of it, and it is a coming out story. But it's not a very queer film.
No, the whole, no.
Why don't you tell our listeners at home, just a very brief synopsis, what does it entail?
All right.
Because it's not the same story as Home for the Holidays.
It is not. So, Happiest Season involves a romantic relationship between Abby and Harper.
Abby is played by Kristen Stewart. Harper is played by Mackenzie Davis.
Harper is going home to their parents for Christmas, and they invite Abby over on this, like, romantic night. But on the way there, Harper reveals that not only does her parents not know that she's lesbian, they also don't know that Abby is a lesbian or that they're in a relationship.
She was apparently supposed to have come out to them the previous summer, but yes. She chickened out.
Yes, exactly. Chaos ensues.
Chaos ensues. As Abby, K-Stu says in that classic old line, it's only 5 days. What's the worst that can happen?
Yeah, exactly.
Cut to everything horrible going on. So it's basically Harper shoves Abby back in the closet.
Yeah.
For these 5 days, and everything that you think could go wrong does. And Harper also has two sisters.
Yes.
And the same kind of thing. There is some wackiness, but it's kind of,
it's more Hollywooded wackiness.
Yeah, but also thematically, like, the idea, the whole point is that their parents have demanded perfection of them their whole lives, and that's, of course, soured their relationships with each other, and made Harper into really one of the most odious characters in the entirety of cinema.
Yeah. I understand that it is in part due to her growing up queer in that family's household, but she does some horrible shit to Abby.
She really is obnoxious, and I think that partly is due to just the actor, Mackenzie Davis. She just has one of those faces, I think.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting
it. But also her voice and her mode of delivery is perfect for the character, but it's just, at least the way she plays it, is just really grating, and you're wondering the whole time, like, why the fuck would K-Stu even be with this person?
Yeah.
But it works, and I think that's important to point out, though, that yes, what I love most about this is a lot of people have complained about that it's just so unrealistic that she would stay with her, and that it's a tale of gaslighting and an abusive relationship. And yes, it kind of is, but that's exactly what the poison of the closet. That's what it does. It warps our minds and it warps our emotions and our abilities to have solid relationships, you know, or meaningful or thriving relationships. That's just what it does.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really bother me too much on that end. Yeah, I don't really buy it when they get back together. Partly because K-Stu is so good at just showing the hurt.
At acting
in general, yeah. But she does such a good job of portraying the hurt without overplaying it that you really just think, like, would she really go back to her? And so it really, even though it's frustrating, I think maybe it actually does make a little bit of sense. It's, you can see how there's something about queerness and this and queer relationships where we really want things, anything that has even a hint of stability. I think we really gravitate towards that, really do whatever we can to make it work. Yeah. I mean, you know, I certainly didn't do anything like that. I certainly didn't spend 17 years in a marriage that had a hint of stability. Because I maybe felt that was lacking in other areas of my life. I don't know. So I don't know. I can't really speak to that.
No, you can't really speak to that.
But overall, it's, you know, it's very serviceably directed. I noticed this time that there were a lot of wide-angle lenses.
Which is cool when it's used, but I don't really, it's like used to often show big group things, right?
Yeah, it seemed to me that it was more functional. Like, it was just like, we are in a narrow but high-ceilinged space. So the only way we can get a sense of the group is by using a wide angle lens here, you know. But I, you know, having watched it 6 times, I can remember certain images from that, but nothing really ever sticks. There's no image or location or setting that is really ever notable or anything other than just this is the type of sociocultural realm in which the story is taking place. Yeah. You know, these people are rich. This is what a rich home looks like. Whereas Home for the Holidays is so rich and full of character and depth, you know, images. I'll be able to recall images from Home for the Holidays for much longer than I will for Happiest Season.
Same.
I mean, I'm going to be watching them both every year for the rest of my life. So that's that aside.
I will watch them with you.
And I mean, it's not a very compelling argument because it's so obvious, I think, that Home for the Holidays is a superior picture.
In several manners.
Yeah. But Happiest Season is also just lovely and it's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But I think they're both worth our time. Well, this episode comes out a week before Thanksgiving. Our best wishes and also condolences to those of you traveling home for that. Those of you listening outside of the U.S., just think of other, I don't know, Christmas or something.
Yeah. To those outside of the U.S., good job.
Well done, you.
Well done.
There is something interesting about Thanksgiving because, and this is a joke they make a couple times at Home for the Holidays, you have to do that. It's coming again in a month because it's basically
they say that the best part about Thanksgiving is that when it's over, it doesn't come around for another year.
Except.
And then the dad makes a joke about, but they put Christmas a month after, those bastards.
Yeah. So I don't know that there is necessarily the similar dynamic in other countries with their holidays and celebrations. No, yeah. So that is, in that case, a very United States phenomenon. But I think the whole returning home and to the place that you have escaped.
Yes.
Especially for queers. That is there are universal aspects to that phenomenon.
Yeah.
All right. Well, have a great week. Have a great weekend. We will see you on Monday for an all new Adventures in Babysitting.
Yeah.
All right. See you then, lovies.
Bye. Thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been another House of Barbarism podcast, written, recorded, edited, and produced by Document of Barbarism, your friendly neighborhood mountain man fairy princess. Remember, there is no document of civilization which is not, at the same time, a Documenta Barbarism. Mwah.